They say in heaven, love comes first. Well, we'll just have to make heaven a place on earth. It's time for the Zaftercast, and I'm your host, Scott C. Did you tune in today expecting a promo? Well, sorry to tease you in that direction and deceive you, so to speak. Because today we actually have a special episode. We have a mini episode here featuring Mixmack and Sarah Wynn on the program talking all about something very special. Now, on the program before, if you're a regular listener, and even if you're a new listener, we often promote the Sundress Academy for the Arts workshops on this program. The Sundress and the Reading Series, both of them. We often talk about them, but maybe you've never gone to it. Maybe you're curious, what the heck are we talking about? Well, here's the deal. On today's episode, we really want to focus on these workshops because there's one coming up this weekend, and guess who just happens to be hosting it? Yes, it's the Sundress Academy for the Arts, but you know what I mean. Who are the special guests being brought in on this one? It just happens to be our guests. So we sat down with them for a half hour and chatted about their feelings about collaboration, about remixing your own work or somebody else's work, as well as topics related directly to the workshop. What can you expect from it? How do they come up with the idea to do this workshop, this particular topic and everything? Because maybe you've never gone, maybe you've thought about going to one of these, but you never really knew what they were like or what goes on at them. Now, if this piques your curiosity, there are tickets available still to Monster Works this weekend, February 7th, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Sundress Academy for the Arts, just outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. Tickets are still available, as I said. Float on over to sundresspublications.com/SAFTA, S-A-F-T-A, and you can find out all the information as well as purchase your tickets to be a part of this. And then on Sunday is the reading. Sarah, Mac, along with Bethany White, are going to be at the Birdhouse in Knoxville, Tennessee at 3 p.m. to do a reading, and I believe Sarah might be reading from her new e-chapbook, which is being published by sundresspublications.com. It is a free download, and it will be available this coming weekend, so keep your eyes peeled for that. It is going to be a good one. Now, on to the episode. Before we get going, just a quick program note for you. This weekend, also, we'll be dropping the Saftercast promo for next week's episode, so yes, we are still doing one. It's just coming a couple days later. Didn't want to throw everything at once at you on a Wednesday. Also, I do need to apologize, I feel, a little bit for today's episode because the sound quality is not the greatest in places. We had a little extra static, and there were a couple places where my mic started echoing for reasons I don't know. So just bear with it. It's okay. Trust me. I just wanted to give you a heads up kind of thing. Speaking of heads up, there's one thing that always has to happen before we get into the actual episode. And that is, of course, our theme song. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Mac's here with me.
Awesome. We have Mac as well.
Hi, Scott.
There we are. So we are all together now at last.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to start this off the way I always start off one of our full episodes by saying by asking you the random question that is on everybody's mind.
Okay.
You ready for it?
Yes.
Yes.
Just how much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail?
One squirrel squeaker toy.
It's true. He can be bought. Cheap.
Animals can be bought.
When they say can't buy me love, it's a lie. You can buy love.
What type of dog is it?
Black Lab Beagle. He's a blaggle.
Oh, he's a blaggle.
Yes.
How old? 3 months, 6 months, 15 years?
4 years.
4 years. Okay, so he's a full-grown adult.
He is. He's probably more adult than I am at this point.
I don't know about that. You know, we get, as adults, we get to determine what that means.
That's true. Thank God.
Yes, that's very fortunate.
What does being an adult mean to you?
That's a hard question. I guess having the confidence to pursue your dreams and the means to do it, really, or even like scraping together the means.
I would say there's a lot of scraping together involved in being an adult.
Yeah.
So being an adult means scraping.
Yes. Lots of scraping.
Paint, you know, furniture,
I do a lot of that, yes.
It's true.
I love how you both were in sync with that yes. It was very emphatic.
We believe it. We're of the school of scraping.
Scraping grout, tile, whatever it may be.
Well, Matt's in the process of remodeling, I think. And yes. My husband and I just bought a house. So all thoughts are turning to like home improvement. So I think probably the workshop things that we're doing also will involve some hacking things apart and putting them back together in prettier ways. Or maybe not as
pretty.
Hopefully prettier.
Okay. Well, Mac, let me ask you, you know, you're doing renovations a little bit and everything on an apartment, house?
On a house.
Okay. What are you doing renovation wise on it?
Let's see. We took down a lot of wood paneling and put up drywall. We took out a kitchen and replaced the subfloor and got new cabinets up. Doing a lot of painting. We'll be gutting bathrooms next, hopefully later.
What about you, Sarah? What are you thinking right now for the remodel?
Well, ours is mostly outside, so it's digging up turf and putting in a patio and putting in stairs to a deck that doesn't have them and repainting rooms that are really hideous into other colors that are less hideous, we hope.
So neither of you are thinking things like conversation pits or removing part of your ceiling to giant hammocks in?
No, although I did see that cat...
What's a conversation pit? I'm curious.
It's a recessed living room floor that you make into a couch area with lots of pillows and such. It's called a conversation pit. Very popular in the 60s, actually.
Oh.
Early 70s.
Well, right now I'm taking the 1980s out of a house. I don't know if I would put in...
Well, no, you can do a modern variation of it. You know, you don't have to go like 60s shag carpet or something, but you can still have the structure built.
How about a blanket fort?
Ooh.
I think that would suffice.
Blanket fort. That does create conversations. Wonder what kind of conversations, though, you would have in a bed fort as an adult.
Any kind.
Because when you're a kid, they're usually about things like comic books or boys or girls that you like. You know, what do you do as an adult in a fort?
Well.
I just made myself seem like a complete rube, didn't I?
No, I was thinking, like, my blanket fort was not to go the anti-adult way, but, like, mostly with books under it with flashlights and things. Like, I never shared my blanket fort.
Oh, you should. It's good.
I have my doubts.
I'm sure your husband would have no problem with that.
That's true, but he's, like, 6'3", so a blanket fort for Dave would be more like a blanket palace or something. Who knows?
Even better.
Yeah, it's true. It would be very nice. But I don't know if a room of that would be doable in our house.
Dig a moat around it, too.
A moat. That goes back to landscaping.
Have you thought about putting a moat outside your house?
No. Unfortunately, our yard is barely big enough for our dog to go out and have any sort of fun at all. So a moat would only decrease the yard size, not help things along.
Keep nights away from your house, though.
Well, that's what the dog is for.
So you guys are really want to come on this podcast here today because we got an event coming up at SAFTA in a week or so.
Yes.
Yeah, we're really excited about it.
What's going on? Because I'm down in South Florida. I'm not going to be there.
So we are doing a workshop on Saturday, February 7th, from 1 to 4 p.m. It's called Monsterworks. We're going to be doing some hybrid writing and revision practices.
Meaning what exactly?
Well, we're going to do some like actual tearing things apart and putting them back together in strange ways, hoping to break up open people's habits of language and hoping that they'll come away with something brand new and a strategy that they can use over and over or just a new way of thinking about their own work.
I'm curious then, because like I don't do much of that. Now, normally on the show, we don't get into too much in the writing thing because it's not our thing. You know, our theme is your writing doesn't matter. So is this something that you do in your own lives? Is this a way for you to regenerate your creative juices or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, both of us really enjoy, I think, like, changing people's ideas of what form means and what it can do for your writing. Where I use it mostly as a revision tactic, although I've written a whole a whole series of poems that are hybrid works themselves. So I started them as a revision, thinking I was changing one poem, and it just kind of took on a life of its own.
Is that standard revision practice for you?
No, I don't think I have necessarily any standard revision practice, because revising is like the hardest part of writing for me. I have a really hard time going back to what I'm doing and making it, improving the places where it really needs to be improved, so that I think that my poems which need work kind of gather dust because I have a hard time revising.
And I think part of how we're designing these activities is for pieces that maybe you've thought about a lot and to the point that you don't know what to do with them. And so then stepping away from them and looking at other people's texts and other forms can help to sort of give you a new way to look at that piece and revise it in a different direction so that you're not feeling so stuck.
I've been there many times before. You write something so many times, you've looked at it so many times that at this point it's become ash in your mouth.
Right.
And it's hard to get away from your own language a lot of times because...
Or your own patterns or...
Right, right. And so if you take something that you are not so emotionally close with, that is kind of stripped bare of emotion or sentiment or whatever, then you don't have any stake in it. It's a lot easier to look back at the thing you do have some stake in and work with it. So it sort of props up the things that need propping.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing some collaging and some other ways of using existing texts that are not your own so that you can, again, try to get out of your own patterns and language and habits.
Kind of like remixing in a way.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what it is. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And it's not your work. It's, you know, it's not your problem.
Well, I think one of your former guests, No, just had a piece recently that was an album cover. Wasn't that his? Or not an album cover, liner notes. It was liner notes in Brevity. And he used the nonfiction format of a record notes, mm-hmm. To talk about basically personal things as if his life was the band history, basically.
That's awesome.
It was really, really beautifully done. And that's the sort of thing that, like, it'd be very hard to write a poem saying, well, all these hard things happened to me. And by the way, thanks for breaking up with me. But if you put it into the sort of trope of this is a breakup song and this is the song where I get really mad at my ex and this is the song that we wrote when we were at our high times and things like that, like it changes your own expectations about what you're writing.
I could see that. Yeah, I don't think that wasn't No that did that.
That was Hui. Oh, you're right, Amarak.
Yeah. It was Amarak.
You're right. Have you had him on this?
No, I have not yet.
Well, you should.
Well, there we go. You know, we'll reach out to, we'll send it off. We've got so many people on the pipeline to come on this program now.
It's that's good.
That's really great, yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, to be honest.
So what you're saying is you need some revision, Scott.
So, yeah, how did you get this gig doing the workshop here?
Aaron had talked to me about coming down there for a reading. No, TA had talked to me about coming down there for a reading. And then I said, well, Mac lives up here too, right?
I think it was.
Or maybe it was the other way around? I don't know.
The other way around, but yeah, so that we are doing a reading on Sunday.
Oh, yes.
We're doing a reading on Sunday.
The day after the workshop?
The day after the workshop.
Okay. Timing-wise, Mac's book is coming out through Sundress.
In
2016. And my chapbook, Portage, is coming out. Actually, the weekend we come down is when it's released. So it'll be an ebook, a free ebook that's coming out. And Erin had been talking about ways to promote it. I asked her how you get to run a workshop, thinking it's a long way to go for a one-day reading, because I think we're going to end up driving like many hours. I'm not sure. But anyway, she mentioned that this was a good way to promote work and like talk about the things that matter to you. And both of us really care about hybrid works.
Well, that kind of answered my next question about it, which is how do you decide on what you wanted to do for a workshop?
Oh,
because I'm sure as both of you being writers, both of you have a lot of skill sets when it comes to writing. How did you decide on, okay, we're going to talk about hybrid works?
Well, Sarah's really great with prompts. and she sort of pitched prompts, and this was sort of the common ground that we both have is doing these kinds of revision activities or talking about blurring the lines of genre and bringing in outside texts. And this was sort of the thing we had in common. So we decided to go in that direction.
Yeah. Even as a generative process, like not just revision, but generating new work, how to come up with new work when you really had no idea to build from.
It's a really important skill.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose it is. You need to have some, like I tell my students, you have to have some writing in order to have some writing.
It sounds silly, but it's the truth.
Yep. It's the truth.
The best, it's very similar in style to something that I was told once by an editor, which is basically, you know, I'm sitting there fretting over how to edit this text and everything. And my editor just looked at me and went, shut the fuck up and write. Because we can fix everything in post-production, basically, in editing. But we can't do it if it's not there.
Right. And this is just a way to get outside of yourself. Like, when you are so wrapped up in your own head that you can't, you're paralyzed by it, this takes you out of your own head.
So now, what's the next step after you decide, okay, this is what we're going to do? Where do you go from there? Do you start planning exercises? Do you start planning lecture notes? Where along are you in the process?
We have a table full of stuff, texts. Can I tell them what they are?
There's sure, and like pieces.
Got
it's not
like,
a secret.
Takeout menus and
encyclopedias.
And catalogs, and we're sort of sifting through them and designing exercises based on them.
And we're gonna have a packet for people to take away, both recommended readings, but also places where you can kind of build your work using this sort of material, so that they go away not just with what we've written that day, but sort of the toolbox to go the next step.
Yeah, the strategies to use again.
So if I were to attend, let's say I'm listening to this and I'm like, oh, wow, this sounds kind of cool and everything. I'm going to put in for this. And I show up. What can I expect? Am I going to get like a lecture first and then do some activities? Or is it going to, how are you thinking of structuring it?
I'm not a fan of lecturing. I think it's more hands-on.
Yeah, it's definitely hands-on.
It's a bunch of exercises, both experimenting with your own work, but also using things that other people have written so that you're not constrained by your own ideas.
Or your own words,
yes.
Yeah, so we're going to do some context building of, you know, what is a hybrid genre? What are the sort of ethics of collaging? We'll talk about that kind of stuff, but we'll also just be taking things apart and building new things. We have a lot of activities planned.
Are you gearing this toward any specific level? Are you gearing this toward experienced writers or also novice or in between undergrad, grad level? What are we talking here?
We have invited writers of all experience levels and writers of any genre.
Yeah.
So we're definitely welcoming everybody to this workshop.
Yeah, because it's something that you can come in at the point where you are with what you have and take away something that will work for you personally. This isn't something that is restrained by our outside knowledge. We want people to use what interests them, but also what random things that kind of help people, again, get outside their own head. And I think that can happen at any level where as a novice, it's hard to know where to start revision, or even if beyond the word level, what can change a piece entirely if it's really not working for you. But I think that can happen to anyone at any level, actually.
Both of you primarily poetry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How comfortable do you feel talking about stuff beyond your genre, fiction, nonfiction, that sort of style?
Well, we're definitely bringing in a lot of readings that cross the lines of fiction and nonfiction, but also with poetry. I write a lot of prose sequences, and Sarah does as well. I also write a lot of drama-inspired poetry, and some of that comes in prose. So we definitely want to talk about sort of what makes a genre, but also the activities that we have. The activities may sound like it's grade school, but the exercises that we have are suitable for using with any genre. We've asked people to bring 3 to 5 pages, or they can write new pieces in the workshop, but we're trying to build in that flexibility that you can use these things, these strategies with any genre or any writing that you have.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as, yes, we call ourselves poets, I think. Do you call yourself a poet?
I do.
I call myself a poet. But I'm submitting the hybrid pieces that I've written to Fiction Markets.
And, oh, yeah, I do that too.
Almost, I would say about half now of the pieces that I've published are either prose poems or they're the hybrid texts that I've been working on. So it's, I think that that's just a designation I put on myself. Like, I could call myself a hybrid writer. It's just I feel more comfortable saying I'm a poet because I can identify poetry in my writing, where I'm not sure I can identify fiction or nonfiction as easily.
And I've been dabbling in that poetic nonfiction area of the lyric essay. And I think that's all a matter of definition as well, like determining what genre that is, or even a prose poem. Is this a prose poem or is this flash fiction? So there's always discussion in terms of what makes a genre a genre.
Those are very good questions and long-standing debates on some of them, too.
Yeah.
Are you worried that people get scared off by the idea of, oh, we're talking about hybrid literature?
I don't know. That's why we use the language of, like, Frankenstein. I mean, it's just tinkering. It's not...
Did we mention there will be takeout menus?
That's right.
It is activity, then, in a way. You know?
It's some cutting and pasting. It's fine. There is going to be some very basic moving around of text.
I don't think that this is any sort of lofty intimidation factor in our monster workshop.
Yeah, and even the introduction of it is going to probably involve more discussion than it is straight out us saying, here is our definition of something. I think we have how we each define hybrid works, but they may not even coincide with each other. It's okay. We just want people to feel comfortable taking their own works apart and putting them back together in new ways.
And adding takeout menus to the page.
That's
of course. I mean, what's wrong with this? Needs more takeout menu.
You need more prices on this.
We have coupons too, so there you go.
That's true. What's cheaper than poetry? I don't know.
I'm not sure if you want the tiramisu on here. Did you try the double chocolate cake on here?
Have you looked at the appetizers?
Would you like to see our wine menu? I think it might complement this poem very well.
This is a great idea.
That is a really great idea. It is.
Thanks, Scotty.
You're welcome. My sarcasm works sometimes.
We will consider it as like a collaborative effort for our hybrid workshop.
Take it. I'm not gonna do anything with it, so it's all yours.
Great.
All right.
Now, you two are very close, I sense, as writers, but also physically close in terms of location. Well, location-wise.
We are sitting next to each other, even as we speak, Scott. Mac and I met at George Mason University, where we both did our master's in fine arts.
So you've remained close and everything. Do you find yourselves challenging each other often? Well, let me rephrase that. I gave you guys that idea about the wine list and everything. Now, my wife and I, she's also a writer. And quite often, one of us might come up with a title for something, and we'll look at the other and go, that's yours. I can't do anything with that. That one's got to be you. Do you have that kind of camaraderie over it, or is there more of a...
I mean, sure. Yeah. Sometimes.
We haven't collaborated very much before this, really, either. That, like, the circumstances wouldn't demand it. Like, we've had discussions where we've disagreed, but...
Yeah, I think it's always kind of been clear whose is...
What idea?
But I'll tell you that, I mean, this is sort of weird, but while we're choosing the texts to bring to the workshop, we've had that discussion. I have a project in mind to use this particular park map for. So I don't know if it would be good to bring it to offer up to everybody else because I sort of already have a future for it in mind. Or like I have a book that I got for free. Do I really want people to cut it up or do I want to save it for myself and cut it up later, right? So we've sort of already imagined futures for some of our found texts. So we've been having that discussion, which is sort of like kind of in line with what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it's not like a professional rivalry between the two of you. Where
no, I think so.
Scott, professionally, I don't do what Mac does aside from being a poet. So.
Well, that's what I mean. Is I'm thinking Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings were very close friends in country music. And they collaborated quite a bit, but they always looked at each other with a wary eye, wanting to know what the other was up to.
I don't know. I think the nature of the group of friends that we're in, not just between ourselves, but I think that, like, Mac is very supportive by saying, like, I think your work is good for this or not good for, well, not good. She never says it's not good for
this.
I think
your work is not good.
but what she says is the market is right for your work or not right for your work.
That can be a real risk in artistic communities, right? Competition and, and whatnot. But I think that you really can't get a lot done if you worry about that too much, right? I would much rather think about collaboration and how to further my own work and share ideas with people than like be so worried about what's mine.
And I think too that like in the grand scheme, Mac's work is pretty different from mine. So I think that we can only, you know, admire the differences in our work and say, oh yeah, that's great. It's not like we're necessarily competing for the same markets usually anyway.
I don't know. I don't think about it really.
It's not like
I guess what I'm saying is if you can decide to be in competition with your friends or you can decide to not be.
That's a good point.
And so I just don't like track what markets you're trying to get into and if I'm trying to get into the same ones, right? Like
we don't talk about it that much. You know, come to think of it.
We do, but
we don't talk about it saying, hey, we don't necessarily do.
Oh, yeah, like submit to the same places at the same time or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. We don't collaborate in that way.
But like if she's a finalist in a book contest, I think that's great. I don't think that's dangerous to me.
No, yeah.
This is like different from what we started talking about, I think.
It is, but yeah, we just don't, we're not competitive, I guess, is what we're saying.
That's what we're saying.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. It's okay. You're not competing with each other, but not collaborating necessarily. And I understand that. My wife writes a very different style than I do. So we don't really collaborate with each other, but we don't compete with each other either.
We've been wanting to collaborate more. We've never written a thing together. Mostly we've designed prompts together. We're putting this workshop together. But we've never written a piece together. And that's something we've been talking about trying, right? Yeah. So we've never tried it. But I don't think that would lead to competition either.
No. I think it's also a personality type. Like we're just not – I'm not a competitive person really.
Right. I think about this a lot, though, because I think that competition is sort of inherent in the poetry world, right? And I think that to stay comfortable, you have to – well, I have to sort of downplay that aspect and just, you know, find people to be in community with and not think about competition.
It's not productive.
Right. Not productive. Right.
I've had the moments where I wish I had thought of something first. Definitely.
I mean, I feel that way about one of the projects that Sarah's working on now. But I mean, like, I don't hate her for it. I'm just like, dang, that's cool.
Awesome. We got to have more writers just take that attitude of, dang, that's cool.
I think it's all about context, too. I mean, sometimes just because somebody does something that's similar to what you're trying to do doesn't mean, like, it doesn't always mean that you can't do the thing that you're trying to do, but it does mean that you're then in conversation with that thing. So sometimes you might have to figure out, I don't know, if you do have to change your piece so that it stands on its own now that that thing exists out in the larger context. Or, like, I write these dramatic hybrid pieces, which more and more people are doing, which, yeah, I have to think about that, right? I have to think about how other people are using the forms and how I'm using the forms. And so it does complicate things, but it just gets really frustrating if you try to think about trying to do everything better than everybody else.
Yeah. Well, and in the grand scheme too, we were just talking about this with our definition of collaborative work, because my feeling is, I said it, we didn't invent the English language. You may have used three words that I really enjoy, those three words. And those three words, if you were saying we're going to come to a group and those three words are going to be sort of common material, did you put those, like, were you the first person to say the red rose? Probably not. So, like, what does it mean to collaborate in that sense?
Yeah, or even, like, when you're in collaboration with a takeout menu or a piece written by somebody else, and thinking about attributing collage and things like this, mm-hmm. But also you can sort of take that attitude toward people who are writing in a similar way as you, right? That you're kind of in collaboration with them because you're doing similar work. So you should be paying attention to what they're doing. And again, trying to figure out how your work can be different or, I don't know.
Unique.
Right.
Yeah.
We're back to the idea of remixing.
Right. But I was trained as a librarian before I got this master's. And so I care about attribution and I care about intellectual property. I don't want it to seem that I don't. Right. But I think that people can become very precious with what is, quote, their idea if they use a takeout menu and they get all mad if you also use a takeout menu. That's just an example. I've never seen a takeout menu problem before. But anyway,
We will now.
Yes,
will
exactly.
Now.
We may have more than one. But anyway, I think that people need to think about the world that we live in and the collaborative things that happen that are great in our world, the wikis and education and things that using people's ideas with permission and remixing, that is a valid thing to do.
Right.
Well, there's been textbooks written on it for comp students or anything, remix culture and such. And actually, I just taught one this week using one video on YouTube and then showing a remix of it from DJ Steve Porter and putting them side by side and saying, I don't know if he's authorized to use this. I don't know if they paid him and said, hey, do a remix on this for us. Here's the footage and everything, like PBS did with Melody Sheep and the Digital Icon series. But there's something going on there I think is absolutely fascinating right now with remixing and mashup culture. I'm excited to see what's going to happen now in literature, and I think you guys are onto something here in training a few others in it.
Well, definitely, we're not the first people to think of this. I mean, one of the books that I took a art independent study about generating work, about the creative process. And one of the books that the teacher used was Steal Like an Artist. And it was about, you know, using mashups and things to generate brand new work that's innovative and exciting and doesn't detract from the thing that already exists. You're not actually stealing their thunder. You are furthering it.
In my book that is forthcoming from Sundress, I have a received character, a comic character, but that's covered under transformative use. Fair use covers transformative use, right? You created something new with the thing that exists. It's not the same thing, right? You're not copying the thing. You're using it to generate something new. And I think everybody should do that. Right, or that everybody does that.
Yeah.
Right, because not a lot of things are brand new.
I'm totally in favor of that, because if a mashup can take two songs that I absolutely hate by themselves and then create a song that I'm actually engaged in listening to, like, I'd have to think about it. There's one that I know of that mixes Snow Patrol with the Backstreet Boys.
Oh.
Two songs I hate individually, but combined, great track. So we're almost out of time here on this little mini episode. And before we leave it out here, let's get some info real quick. Where can, first off, the folks find you both online? Where can the kids find you?
I'm at bluebirdwords.com. And I'm also on Twitter as @blueashling. And it's blue like the color, AISLING. And Mac.
I'm at mixmac.com, which sounds like a DJ. It's mxmack.com.
And are you on the Twitter as well, Mac?
Oh, on the Twitter, I try to avoid the Twitter, but I'm Mixmac Poet on Twitter.
Okay, but you're technically there.
I am.
Technically there. And Sarah, when's the book coming out? You said it's coming out the same weekend. Here's the workshop, which will be this coming weekend.
Yes, it is. I believe the actual release date is the 7th.
So what's the name of it? Where can we download it? You said it's a free ebook?
It is. It's called Portage, and it'll be on the Sundress site.
Under the free e-chaps, along with some mighty fine other writers on there as well. So we'll have to check.
I'm honored to be in that company. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've rated it a couple times for text for my students.
Oh, yes.
I enjoy giving them a whole chapbook and being like, here, read a whole collection. So
for free.
And who knows, maybe Portage will be up in the near future. I don't know.
Yeah, the 7th. Yeah.
So awesome. Well, it has been lovely having you both on here. Thank you so much for...
Yeah, thank you very much. It was great chatting.
It was great chatting with you, and yes, we will have a full episode with you in the future. Until then, though, take care.
Bye, Scottsy.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.